Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us today on the podcast, A Basic Conversation. Today, Father Basic and I will delve into some of the themes he covered in a lecture talking about improving relationships with family, friends, and foes. And really, it's just a conversation about enhancing and deepening our personal relationships. And Father Basic, it's good to be here with you again.
Thanks, Brad. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you got tough questions for me.
I'm ready. I do, yes. Yeah. So just to provide a little bit of context for the lecture that you gave, the underpinnings of the lecture was based on, it's in response to COVID and the disorienting impact the pandemic has had on our lives and our relationships. And the idea is that even though our lives have been changed over the last two years plus, there's an opportunity for us to reassess and reevaluate how we're living our lives, and in particular, how we're relating to family members, to friends, neighbors, colleagues, and even people we don't like.
Yeah.
Which is the foes part of the title.
Could we get it? And even our deceased loved and
even,
ones.
Yes, even in our deceased loved ones. Yes.
That's a good summary you gave, Brad.
Thank you. I was paying.
You must have listened carefully to the lecture.
I did. Yes, I did. Before we get to the content, let's talk about how you delivered that lecture. And you use, and I've seen you do this before over in homilies and other talks, you used a vignette.
Yeah.
Framework where you had six different vignettes.
Yes.
You had an Abraham, you had a Sarah, you had an Isaac, Jacob, Rachel, and Rebecca, and each of them had unique situations. And you talked about in real personal terms in a narrative form. I've seen you use that often. What do you like about that way to deliver?
Yeah, it always seems to me that it makes it more concrete, that it sounds more practical, that it's more in touch. In other words, I don't want to give a theological lecture with using words that people don't understand. I think the great example I used in the lecture was of a guy. I'm talking to a guy about his marriage. And he says, "Yeah, I've been married five times." I said, "Well, five times? I don't think I should be talking about that." He said, "No, it's five times to the same woman." And then he tells me, you know, I was married to my lover, and then I was married to the mother of my kids, you know, and then I was married to my nurse when I was very ill, and so on. So it makes it concrete. Mm-hmm. And always the hope is that if I describe something properly, people will be listening and saying, "Oh, yeah, that's me. You know, I understand. I've been married to the same guy for 20 years, and our relationship has changed also." Mm-hmm. So that's my hope, is always to use descriptive material in such a way that when people hear it, they're thinking, "Yeah, that's me," or "I understand that," or "I got that same problem of trying to deal with my wife and right. when I was sick or something." Yeah, so I use the technique a lot, and the naming, I use biblical things for memory reasons. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca,
I was wondering where
Jacob
you came
and
up
with. Rachel.
Okay.
So I often use those names because it's a memory device,
right.
going through the biblical stories of Abraham and Sarah and so on.
Right. And you use multiple vignettes because if I'm not married and you talk about Abraham and his
exactly.
wife, it might not be totally relatable, but then you
exactly.
have Sarah with the dysfunctional family. And
right. Yes, and I would try to have my descriptive material as broad as possible so that everybody hearing it can say, "Oh, yeah, I'm linked into that part."
Yeah. You're looking for relatability and something that resonates with the audience.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in the Abraham one, in the
he was the guy married five
yes,
times.
Yes, five yeah. times. You put together Carl Rogers and Martin Buber's
yeah.
the idea of accepting people,
yeah.
but then also this idea of confirming others. I've never heard that term, confirming others.
Yeah.
Really powerful, and it was used in the context of a marriage, but you said it's applicable to anything.
It applies to any relationship that we have. You know, there was a famous debate right up in Ann Arbor, University of Michigan, between the psychotherapist Carl Rogers and the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber. And Rogers' big thing always was acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
All of his talks and lectures and books and so on, you got to accept the other person.
Right.
And Martin Buber, the Jewish philosopher, said, yes, that's good, but I think we should confirm people. And what he meant, that is an odd use of terms, and that hasn't stuck, and people don't usually say it, but what he meant was that in my relationships, I should see your potential. You could be another Bob Costas.
I'm aiming for that, so thank you for seeing that.
So what I do, confirming means I see your potential, and then I want to help you develop it. I want you to do more interviews with me, Brad, because the more you do, the more
the better
you'll become.
I'll get.
You'll become more like Bob Costas.
If you didn't see something in me, you would say, hey, if one time we did it was great, that's it. I did it as a favor.
Yeah, Martin Buber is great for helping all of us understand human relationships. He had a good feel for Christianity. Martin Buber did, yep. Jewish philosopher and so on. And he appreciated Jesus as a great religious figure, a great teacher. And so his language is, of course, the big thing he said was that in relationships, we are tempted to deal with the other person as an it.
Hmm.
He distinguished it, I-thou relationships and I-it relationships. So the danger in personal relationships is whether it's with your mother or your colleague at work or your spouse or whoever is to treat them like an it, an object. You know, making a sex object out of women is a great example of I-it relationships. And it becomes manipulative and controlling, and it doesn't allow the other person to develop. And Buber said, what we got to do is get past this I-it relationships, which is, we all know that, wanting to control it,
right.
Wanting to manipulate it, make it go my way. And he says, you got to have I-thou relationships in which I respect you, in which I recognize your uniqueness, where I don't try to make you into a clone. It's like the father who wants his son to be as good a basketball player as he was, you know, and he's going to make a clone. And the kid likes ballet. He doesn't want to play basketball.
Right.
He wants to be a ballet dancer. And so the I-thou respects the individuality of the other person. You know, Buber has great stuff, and it's picked up by Christian theologians because it's so insightful about human nature as a whole.
Right.
And Buber actually got that out of the Hebrew scriptures, which are very dialogic. God calls people by their name. You know, he calls Abraham to serve him. He calls Moses by name. God, that's a good idea. God calls all of us by name.
We should use each other's names,
yeah,
at the very least.
Yeah, and the name is your uniqueness, your potential, what God has given you. So it's great stuff from Buber. You know, he wants us to have a feel for the other person, to sort of... There's a line from Rod McEwen, a song, that he wants you to crawl. I'm going to crawl behind your eyes. Mm. It's a great thing. I want to crawl behind your eyes, which means I want to see the world the way you see it.
Mm.
It's like when you're an administrator of a school system, you don't want all yes people telling you you're great and every idea that you ever had is just gold. You want somebody who says, wait a second, did you think of this?
Right.
You don't want all yes people as an administrator, right? You want people around you who will be honest and say, that's a nutty idea. He says, unintended consequences.
For sure.
So don't do it or think it through. So,
reconsider.
Yeah, so Buber is just great. Yeah, I-thou, more I-thou relation. And of course, what he says is that when you have an I-thou relationship and we really respect, we get a glimpse of the eternal thou.
Mm.
you get a glimpse of thou, God. God is the thing here. So that's how we come to know God, is by knowing other people and seeing their potential and helping them to develop by your language you were picking up on. By confirming you, then I get a glimpse of a God who confirms us,
right.
A God who wants us to develop our potential.
I found that really, the way you link that, Carl Rogers and Buber, that's a very pragmatic way on how to improve our relationship, whether it be with a spouse or with anyone.
That was for sure.
Really powerful. The Sarah vignette, and I'm not going to go through every one of them, but this one had to deal with the dysfunctional family. And you frequently mention that all of our families are imperfect. There's very few Hallmark movie holiday moments, right? And so you frequently reassure us that the family unit is always, in some ways, there's always some fracturedness. And
I like to pick up on the Holy Family, as we call them in Christian circles. We call Mary, Jesus, and Joseph, Mary, Joseph, and Jesus as the Holy Family. But they had their problems too. You know, they didn't understand. Jesus sort of a rite of passage story. He stays back in Jerusalem. They leave. They get all worried and upset and come back, so they didn't understand him. And then there's another story, often not remarked upon, in Mark's gospel, where Mary when Jesus goes public for the first time. Mm-hmm. Remember, Jesus lived most of his life in a family setting in a tiny town as almost his whole life. I always envision Mary saying, "Hey, Jesus, when are you going to get going? Or don't you think you should move out on your own?
Right.
You know, I mean, you're still at home. You're 30 years old. What are you doing at home?" And so when he does go public, she doesn't understand him. It's in Mark's gospel for people who don't know that story.
Right.
And in Mark's gospel, says, and she thinks he is out of his mind. Hmm. And goes out to try to get him to stop this whole thing of preaching in public. So the point is, as you were making, is that even the Holy Family was dysfunctional. And so we all got our problems. One of the big mistakes in family life is to think it's going to be perfect.
Right. And we're disappointed.
I'm going to come home from work and everything's going to be in order. Dinner will be prepared and the kids will be behaving. You know, it just, we have to be ready for the dysfunctions that happen and go with that and to build on that.
And the 2 points that you brought up forward as far as, again, how we can improve the relationship within family is through communication and also forgiveness.
Yeah. I used a phrase, we have to forgive the other for being human.
That's a great statement.
I love that phrase.
Yeah.
I probably borrowed it from somebody, but I don't remember who.
Just put that parenthesis.
As I said, my if I ever have an original thought, I'll let you know.
That's strong. That's a strong one.
It's all borrowed. Yeah. Yeah, have to forgive the other for being human, for making mistakes, for having foibles, for not being consistent, for not living up to their own ideals. But at the same time, that I think frees us up to see the goodness, you know. So you can't just get down on your spouse all the time because she interrupts you when you're talking. I mean, she does a lot of other beautiful things. She's a great mother, you know, raises her kids. I'm proud of the way she's raising the kids. And she does pay me honest compliments, and she's affectionate, you know, so that you don't want to make this totally negative, but starting out, you're going to have imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
And then that frees us up, I think, to not be mad about the imperfections or dwell on them or see that's terrible, but to be able to see what's good about the other person.
Right. You made a comment about beware of your Messiah complex. I'm not sure which vignette you shared that, but that one... That one caught my attention.
That's a personal story. That was one of my own things. When I would think that I could solve everybody's problem, and that I knew the answer to everyone's questions.
How long ago was that?
A long time ago. Early on in my ministry.
Early on.
Yeah. Yeah, early on in my ministry, I realized, my concrete example is I'm listening to you for a half hour to tell me about your problem. And so, okay, I got it. Here's your problem here. If you would just quit drinking at night after work and don't drink after work, we'll have a solution to our problem here. So go don't drink. And then what I found is my prayer was, Lord, preserve me from my Messiah complex. Hmm. And at that point, instead of telling you don't drink when you get home from work, I listen for another half hour, at least, or more.
Right.
And now I realize that what I wanted to say a half hour ago makes no sense at all. The problem isn't drinking after work. That isn't the problem.
There's a root cause in there.
Yeah, really. There's something deeper going on here. The problem is that you don't know how to deal with your anger over work. You're upset with what went on at work, so now we got to deal with that problem. So yeah, I developed that idea myself, and I often didn't live up to it, from us say.
Hmm.
I spoke too soon before I really understood. But the whole thing was first understand what the other person is saying. Make sure I got it clear. Am I got this right that you're telling me that you can't talk to your wife about how upset you are about work? No, is that what you're telling me?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that I try to get it. Yeah, preserve me from my Messiah complex.
Yeah. I took that also. You were inviting us or challenging us to deep listen, be real present across from people.
For sure.
And
then
if we do that, that will help improve relationships.
Yeah, and presence, you used a great word there. We got to be present to people, attentive, listening. The other thing I learned in my ministry was to listen. I guess when I was first ordained, this gets too long. Anyway, I learned early on in my first priesthood, I went to meetings, and the priest was, they were called CFM meetings, Christian Family Movement, and there were five couples in a house and meeting, and the whole program was the priest could not say anything during the whole meeting. And he could say a couple minutes at the end.
Mm.
So I'm sitting there through hundreds of meetings, hour after hour, and it dawned on me, since I can't talk, I might as well listen.
Really?
This is one of the first 5 years I was ordained a priest in Sandusky, Ohio, St. Mary's. I always said, people in St. Mary's, Sandusky taught me how to be a priest.
Yeah.
And they taught me because I was listening to them. In other words, I didn't have to say, I got a better idea than you just said. Here's the way you should have said. No, I can't talk. Only can talk at the end. That's the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I learned to, whatever qualities I have as a listener, I got from those people in Sandusky, Ohio, St. Mary's, hundreds of meetings, sitting there silently and trying to understand what people were saying.
Yeah. You know, the also an underlying theme that was woven throughout the lecture was this idea of love of neighbor. And we hear that so often, but you put it in the context of relationships, the importance of relationships, and it's central to the Christian message, obviously. Who are the individuals that exemplify that for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in my own life, it was my father and mother,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Major influences on me. From my mother, I learned acceptance. You know, she was a great acceptor of the evils of life. She gave birth to a very defective child, my brother David. And rather than be angry at God or feel guilty about bringing a totally disabled child, RH factor, non-functional mm-hmm. child in the world, she accepted it. And she said, now my job is to take care of my son, who requires full-time attention, which my mother did. So she was an example of love has a face.
Yeah.
You know, love isn't a generality. That's what's great about Jesus. Jesus didn't talk about love in the abstract. He talked about the Good Samaritan taking care of the enemy person and who's beat up by the side of the road.
Yeah.
His examples are always concrete,
mm-hmm.
real. That's what the greatness of the teaching of Jesus. And so I think that's where we learn it. You know, we might learn it from a teacher. You might learn it,
I also, throughout your talk, you were also challenging, inviting us to be alert for those times where we can love our neighbor and also be alert for others that are doing that type of work. Because that's inspiring and uplifting but you have to be alert for that.
Exactly, yeah. It's a great phrase. I'm sure I got that from my mentor, Karl Rahner, the great German Jesuit theologian who's in my bones and blood.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about being on alert
mm-hmm.
for the presence of God in our lives, on alert for people who need our help.
Yep.
So it's an awareness. It almost links in a lot with the Buddhist kind of thought that awareness is what's important,
yep.
Consciousness of what's going on. So in our even relationship, you know, it's really helpful when we are in ordinary conversation. We can practice that sort of thing of love of neighbor just by listening to the other person, trying to hear behind the words. You know, hear behind the words. What's the emotion that goes with what you're telling me now?
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'm in tune with more of a total person response, not just the words coming out, not just the intellect, not just what you want me to hear, but what is in your heart.
Right.
And of course, none of us are totally good at that, but it's a worthwhile effort to try to hear the heart as well as the mind.
Hmm. Right. And then, of course, one of the most challenging tenets of Jesus' ministry was to love your enemies.
Yeah.
And you spent some time in the lecture about that.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to love the people we see every day and get along with, right?
Yeah.
But to love the enemies was... It's just, love your foes was just an incredible challenge, right?
For sure, that's the challenging part of Jesus. I mean, even many people can love those who love them.
Right.
But the challenge Jesus put forward is love even your enemies. And of course, he demonstrated that on the cross, his crucifixion, Father, forgive them, they know not what they're doing.
Yeah.
He's forgiving the executioners. Father, forgive them. They know not what they're doing. And so that is the great challenge. And, of course, none of us are perfect at that. But it's worthwhile trying. I think a lot of times, you know, we talk about family. So there's fights occur and people get mad. And sometimes they don't even remember why they're mad at one another, you know.
Yeah.
We haven't met with my cousin Joe for years. I don't even remember why. And then to try to reconcile that relationship to see if we couldn't, hey, Joe, we haven't talked for years. How about if we get together and watch the Notre Dame game together, you know. Let's have a good time together and maybe rehash. Sometimes it's got to be more direct, you know. Your spouse and you have not, it's been sort of cool lately, and maybe we don't even know why it's been cool lately, but let's just talk. Let's get it out in the open.
Yeah, clear the air.
Yeah.
And I think I like that you took this love your enemies and foes piece and took it to a softer level, meaning just the people we might be.
Right.
There's a fissure. There's a estrangement.
Right.
So, the suggestion that you gave us was, let's reach out and let's try to reconnect.
Right. Try to reconnect. Yeah. And it's a good example of what you brought up earlier was, when I described the problems, I want to do it in such a way that more people will link in.
Sure.
I mean, there's some people who don't have any major foe or enemy or under attacking them, but the idea that we're not totally in sync is much more ordinary or unexceptional, and let's try to link in that. Right. So it's all part of trying to describe the situation in a way that includes more people.
Yeah, yeah. If you just haven't made contact with a high school friend that you have that we haven't kept in touch with, that's in line with that whole aspect. You know, one of the things then that actually surprised me with the lecture was that idea of reconnecting with our deceased loved ones and friends, the communion of saints, which I've heard through Catholicism my whole life, but I didn't fully tune into. All of us have a communion of saints, and it provides an opportunity to who are those people that we haven't really talked to or reconnected.
Yeah, I think that was an important part of healing our relationships. Some people are mad at their spouse because they died too soon, angry.
Yeah.
You know, some people feel like, I feel guilty because I wasn't good to my grandmother who died. And we got people who have lost kids, children, out of order, who are grieving deeply. And so, I get back to my mentor, Karl Rahner, German Jesuit, who was so influential on me. But his great statement was that our deceased loved ones are closer to us now than they were when they were walking the earth with us. We have barriers to seeing them. Yeah. They don't have barriers anymore, and that they're with us. You know, I find it interesting. A lot of people tell me that their deceased loved ones, they feel like they're now and then they're present to them. Mm-hmm. It's like they're in the same room. In fact, the great Thomas Merton, the great spiritual Trappist monk, spiritual writer, he was in Cuba and he had a revelation as his father was in the room with him.
Right.
It was as real as anything, you know, and his father was there.
Right.
And I talk to people like that who think they're child who died in the teenage years is close to them.
Yeah.
So picking up on that, on Rahner, that our deceased loved ones are actually with us, close to us, I think could help in many ways. You linked it up with our creed. I'll say, I believe in the communion of saints. Christians who hold the Nicene Creed say, I believe in the communion of saints, that all the people who have died in the world are united with Christ. The Hebrew scriptures talk about the great cloud of witnesses, this large group of people. And that, you know, one of the things I was saying, things struck me as concrete with this is, one of the ways we could honor those people is by trying to imitate their best virtue.
Their best virtues. What a wonderful, pragmatic way to do
it. Yeah, I often do that at homilies and funerals, like so-and-so was such a man involved in the world. He used his business to do good. He was a great boss. He understood people. And maybe we could try to do a little of that ourselves as a way of honoring his memory.
Right.
Or she was a great mother. You know, she was at home. She made lunches for us. She took care of, she sacrificed her life so that we could have a life, so we could go to school. And she supported us all the way. And now maybe I could be a little more like that.
And I believe you said, you shared that you feel really connected with your mom in a lot of times.
Yeah, I do. That's that great struggle of life. My mentor again, Karl Rahner, said the key to the spiritual life is acceptance, but how hard it is to do. And so I often think of my mom that way, of having accepted life, difficulties of life, and trying to do that myself. sometimes, you know, when you're sick and you're not feeling well, you might think of somebody who's more sick,
yeah,
who's
right.
got things worse, and so it helped me to put up with what's going on.
One last question.
Yeah.
COVID, what's been the biggest impact to you personally?
Yeah,
how's it changed you? How is it?
Yeah. Of course, the COVID came after I was no longer the active pastor mm-hmm. of Corpus Christi University
right.
Parish. It kept me often from visiting people who were in nursing homes. My good friend, Bob Holden, priest friend who since died, he was in a nursing home in Wauseon, Ohio, and for long periods of time, I couldn't visit him. And that made it difficult. That was the same thing happened with other people. So I suppose ministerially, there was less personal contact with people. I maybe did more counseling over the phone, which is a nice thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I think some good
right.
things happened, but I was always happier when I could look at somebody's face as they're talking to me and pick up some more of the emotion and so on.
Right.
So that made it harder for me, I think, to be an effective counselor.
Yeah. Well, I think as we wrap this up, the lecture and even our conversation here, those ideas of how to enhance our personal relationships, deepening, they're good no matter what. But really the lecture was as a result of COVID, and what I drew from it, I think others drew from it, was this an invitation to come out of ourselves again. Because we all kind of withdrew over 2 years, and you were inviting us to look at our relationships in a different way. Use this as an opportunity, but I think it was also, it's time to come out. It's time to connect.
Brad, that's marvelous summary. That's better than I did. Wonderful. You're good at getting a point, and you said it beautifully.
Well,
that's enough. Amen,
amen,
Brad.
Amen. Well, Father Basic, thank you for sharing your thoughts and perspectives. It's been wonderful. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again, Brad.